The Guardian.
Right, sorry, I'm Max Rushton, here for this week only because Jimbo is on his holidays. There you are. Thursday, for me, is normally clarinet practice day, or I don't actually have any work to do, but since I'm here, we might as well have another stab at a podcast. So here is today's Football Weekly Extra. Is that bad? I feel really, do you know, when I did that, I felt awkward, I'll be honest. Look, after the incredibly moderate success of Monday comes the all-too-difficult second pod. If you listened on Monday and are back, thanks. If you didn't listen on Monday and you're expecting James, apologies. Stick with it. The general reaction from Monday was, I'm not as bad as you thought I would be. So, you know, that is tremendously gratifying. On today's pod, we answer the following questions, or at least we try to. Why was the Champions League so boring this week? Is Nicholas Bentner really the second best striker in Europe? Can Arsenal win the quadruple? Why on earth is Barry allowed to vote in our elections? We find out the best thing about Sidlow's trip to Lyon. And of course, an eagerly awaited update from me on the progress of my new flat and which minor celebrities I'm hanging out with this week. We'll start with part one. Right, we have a panel today, which is fortunate. Simon Burton is here. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you very much.
We've never met.
No, not until a few minutes ago.
A few minutes ago. It's going all right.
I think our relationship has really started very well.
Okay, and the clarinet playing?
I think we're going to be great friends.
I hope so. You've bought amazing amounts of notes.
No, I've bought amazing amounts of paper.
With writing on it?
Yeah, some of the paper does have writing on. And some of that writing may come in handy in the next hour, minutes and hours and days. We'll see.
Okay, and you know a lot about football. I'm hoping not as much as Jonathan Wilson, because on Monday he said a lot of things, and I had to do that face where I was nodding and pretending to know what he was talking about. I just don't know if I pulled it off.
Yeah, I know much less than him.
So okay, that's brilliant. That's perfect news. Sean Ingle is with us again.
Hello.
Sean, no mouth abscesses, no ailments.
No, though I did have an unfortunate happening to me the other day. It was just before bedtime. I, you know, washed my hands. I'm just about to go to bed. And, like, after washing my hands...
Did you wash your face?
Yeah, done the whole face.
Everything, washing. Okay.
But having made the swivel to the bath towel rack,
yeah,
as I grabbed the towel, my Apple mobile phone hopped out of my loose baggy tracky bottoms and into the toilet.
Oh. Do you know what? I dropped my phone in the toilet recently, and you're meant to put it in a bag of rice.
That's what I've been doing.
And it didn't work for me. Barry?
Hello. Hello. Personally, I would not use a phone that's been in a toilet. Maybe that's just me. I'd just like to add that I have a Sony Ericsson smartphone. It's really good.
I'm
very fun. But I thought you were a bit harsh with the most of the feedback was quite promising from Monday.
Yeah, no, I was pleased.
Some of the clearly Rushton is far less annoying without his face. get this tedious self-promoting no-mark off, please. I will be back once Jimbo is. I thought that Max Rushton chairing Football Weekly was a joke and not a funny one. We don't care that he recently bought an apartment. We don't care what kind of horn he blows in his spare time. We don't care what celebrities tweet him. Come back, Jimbo, and save us from the endless inanities of this terminally egocentric... Oh, can't say that. And me no likey Max Rushton at all. Obviously, no one can fill Jimbo's boots, but to my mind, Max Rushton has very, very tiny feet indeed. We should probably talk about some football.
Okay,
you're probably
right.
Mad.
Okay, let's start with Chelsea. On Monday, we all thought, if Ancelotti lost, that he'd go, and it was a potential banana skin, and then Copenhagen turned out to be rubbish. Barry?
Yeah, it was quite disappointing, actually. Copenhagen had kind of talked a good game, or they had a good game talked on their behalf by me, for one, and many others. And then when they got to play, they were quite clearly very, very rusty after their long winter break. Hadn't played any competitive football for, I think, 3 months, and it showed. And you'd have to say that the tie is well beyond them at this stage.
Sean?
I mean, I thought Chelsea played reasonably well. I mean, if they had been 3 or 4 up at half-time, no one would have complained. It was interesting. We talked on the pod about whether Chelsea would play 4-4-2 with a flat midfield, and they sort of did with Ramirez on the right. And it was interesting, Ancelotti dropped Drogba and played Anelka and Torres together. And as a partnership, I thought it worked. Torres got into lots of good positions. He didn't have a particularly good game. It reminded me of kickoff two every time the ball came to me. It clank off his shin and he had shooting opportunities and they'd go wayward. But that was the first time I've seen Chelsea look fluent since Torres has come in.
John Terry's in the papers today saying that this is the turning point and we can still catch Man United.
Yeah, well, I mean, you'd expect him to say that. But it was certainly, I mean, they won. A lot of people thought that they may struggle, difficult away trip when they've been slipping up in games. You thought they might win. It was a good result for them. But it is a little embarrassing, the continuing failure of Torres and Drogba to get into goal-scoring form, and Anelka showing them up a bit.
What do people think about Ancelotti claiming that Chelsea have the best strike force in Europe? Because it was, we all talk our children up, you know, when they do something decent. But that I thought was particularly ridiculous. You know, when you look at the likes of, you know, Barcelona with Pedro, Messi, Villa, with, I don't know, even Manchester United with Arsenal, with Bayern Munich. It seems a silly thing to say after a side of. I mean, I was just looking for example. If you look at Chelsea's away form in the Premier League, mm-hmm. They failed to score away in six of their, I think, 13 or 14 games they played this season, and only scored one in another three. So it doesn't strike me as a team that are scoring lots of goals.
There's a great table in The Guardian, isn't there, with all these teams, and page four it is of the sports section, and it's got, you know, who are the best strikers, and it does it in shots to goals conversion rate. Who is the third best striker? Actually, joint second. Best strikers of chances converted, it's Nicholas Bentner. So what does that tell us?
Well, it tells us he's not quite as good as he says he is because he claims to be the best.
But he's level with Eto.
This is where statistics can be really confusing. I mean, if Nicholas Bentner might have had 10 shots this season and scored, you know, three goals, and that takes him on nearly up to, you know, that would take him up to, you know, 28.6 for the year. So I think you've got to be slightly careful about that. I think it's more goals per game is a more interesting stat, and Lionel Messi is top, scoring over a goal a game.
But then
Ronaldo second.
It's league and Europe, and so I don't know. The Premier League to me is the most competitive league by quite a long way compared to Germany, Spain, and Italy. So you presume that the strikers.
That's the Sky indoctrination.
That's the Sky mantra. But it's true, isn't it? Is it not true?
We've had this argument a lot, but I think if you pick the best, say, four or five teams from La Liga and the best four or five in the Premier League, I think still Barcelona and Real Madrid would come first and second.
But that's not exactly the point that the Mets are trying to make.
Yes. Thank you, Simon.
The French equivalent of Wolves are unlikely to beat the French equivalent of Manchester United. But that kind of thing does happen here.
Man United failed to score. What does that tell us about their three strikers and what does it tell us about the second leg they've got against Marseille?
Well, I did the minute-by-minute report on that match, and it was...
God, you're still alive!
Yeah, it was... Some minute-by-minute reports, you're sort of after about 55, 60 minutes, you just want to get up and go home, and you can't, obviously. But
what would happen if you just said, forget it, I'm going home?
I don't know, actually. You'd probably get away with it once.
I think it'd be a good reaction.
For chuckles, but I might try it sometime. But... it was awful. It was really, really, really terrible game. And the weird thing was, I was doing it from an ITV commentary. Peter Drury was the commentator, and about halfway through the second half, he started getting very excited and said, you know, it's come alive now. Now we have a game in our hands. And I'm going, have I missed something here?
Do you think he got a nudge to say, make it more exciting?
I don't know. Maybe if it had been on with your employers, that might happen, I'd say. But it was really bad. I mean, the two... Marseille had identified John O'Shea as Manchester United's weak link.
I think it was like Danger Man.
No, as their weak link. Okay. And they kept sort of punting the ball down his corner. And John O'Shea played quite well. So, you know, nothing came of it. And Manchester United had clearly identified Gabby Heinze as Marseille's weak link. And while Nani had the better of him throughout, Nani wasn't able to capitalise on all the possession he had, and his deliveries were poor. He didn't get many shots off, or if any. I mean, I think there was only two shots on goal in the whole game. It was just really dull and not a good ad for the competition.
Sure.
And Manchester United now might have left it behind them. You know, if they went down to an away goal, that would be the reason why they left it behind them in France.
Well, it's interesting that Ferguson said afterwards that it's a 0-0 is a dangerous score. And if you go back, throughout his career at Manchester United, they've drawn 0-0 four times in away first legs. And three times they've been knocked out in the turn. They drew 0-0 against Rota Vetrograd in 95-6, drew 2-2 in the return, got knocked out. They drew 0-0 against Monaco in 98, drew 1-1 in the return, went out and away goals again. They drew 0 against Real Madrid in 2000, then they lost 3-2 at Old Trafford, and only against Inter a couple of years ago when they drew in, they won the return at Old Trafford. So they're in danger. It is a dangerous scoreline. They should go through, but it is a dangerous scoreline because a goal scoring draw will knock you out.
And Simon, Didier Deschamps said that the United weren't, fancy football anymore, especially their midfield. We touched on this on Monday. Man United's midfield, what do you make of it?
They obviously still are relying on Scholes and Giggs a lot, and it's been, 3 years that people have been saying, how long can this go on? A couple of years ago, Carrick had a really very strong season, but he seems to have faded quite a lot. I think they've got quite a lot of work to do if they're going to get their team to a point where it is kind of universally acclaimed as a great United team.
Barry, how did you, on your minute-by-minute update, how did you report the lasers that were put into...
I didn't even notice.
You didn't notice? It was like a school kid who just got that new toy. Did you see this? In Ever and Nanny's eyes. You know when at school someone would have a little laser, and they'd also have a watch that could control the video that would really confuse the teacher. And they just had a laser pointing in Nanny's eyes when he was trying to take a corner. That seemed to be the most exciting part.
I went to school in a ditch in Ireland. We were lucky to have even a pen.
I saw the picture on the back page of The Sun this morning of Nanny with a laser beam pointed at his head. And previously, laser beams, they tend to be really precise little dots. Mm. And this one was basically occupying his entire face.
And it was green as well. Red would make you think, bright green. I'm going to get shot, but this was a green one. Welcome to part two. The same panel are with me still. Let's talk Champions League. Inter went down 1-0 at San Siro to last year's beaten finalist Bayern. A last-minute goal from Mario Gomez. Sean, you watched this, and you told me this morning you could mention it in passing.
It was an incredibly good game. Both teams really went for it. Bayern, I think, deserved the win. They had a sustained spell of pressure. I mean, Inter did come back in the second half, but, Bayern were great, and with Robin and Ribery on the flanks and Gomez up front, they posed lots of problems. Bayern, they got the goal when Robin cut in for about the 1,000th time, had the shot, Cruz spilled it, and Gomez slotted home. It's interesting also that Italian teams in the Champions League, they played at home. Roma and AC Milan lost last week, and Inter lost last night.
It'd be great if we had an Italian expert, wouldn't it?
I think if James was here, as opposed to sliding down a hill somewhere in Europe, he would probably say, at great length, I'll try and make it shorter, that the pace of Italian football is too sedate to compete with, say, the pace of English, Spanish or German football.
Why is that? Is that just over history, over time? Why would some country have...
I don't know. Well, maybe in the case of Milan, it's because their team is comprised of doddery old men who can't run very fast. But I don't know. You'd have to ask Jimbo. I'm sure he's touched on it before and I probably wasn't listening.
I really can't believe that Robin is still getting away with it. Like, is still cutting in off the right flank onto his left foot and unleashing 25-yard shots on goal without any great pressure. And it seems absurd that a top-level club is still letting him do that.
Right, let's talk Spain. Real still can't get the better of Leon. Our man in Spain, Sid Lowe, was there. Hi, Sid, how are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks. How are you?
I'm very well. Ben said I should ask you, what was the highlight of your trip to Leon?
The highlight, without doubt, was getting possibly the greatest football club mug of all time for my dad's collection. The Leon mug is brilliant, and also their club shop's brilliant because it's got a full-on collection of mugs. You've got loads of choices.
So hang on, is the knowledge of your dad's collection of mugs well known? We all know this, do we?
Yeah, well, yes, yeah, we do.
It's
yeah.
Almost as if Max doesn't listen to Football Weekly when he's not presenting it.
I just missed out on the mug conversation.
That's a kind of insider joke that unfortunately...
Oh, curses, I've been found out. Could you describe the mug to us?
Well, the great thing about it is not only is it big, so you can get a proper cup of tea in it,
okay,
right? But it's also great colours, really bright blue and red. And it's got this kind of 3D relief thing that the badge sticks out, and so does the writing along the side. It's fantastic.
Oh, so you can sort of feel it as well. You can feel it.
If you were blind, you'd be able to hold that mug and know it was the Olympic Lyonnaise mug.
It's a great use.
Now, obviously, if you're blind, probably walking around with a cup of tea might not be the best of ideas anyway.
I think blind people can have a cup of tea, can't they?
Maybe not walk around with it, though.
Okay, that's
true. And you probably wouldn't care which mug you were drinking out of either. Unless, of course, you've got separate mugs to stop yourself getting, you know, some sort of disease off your partner who may not be blind but may have a terrible disease of some sort.
What sort of freaky-ass relationship is this? A leper and a blind man cohabiting in harmony. See, presumably your dad doesn't actually drink tea out of his mugs.
No, he doesn't. He just puts them on the shelf and looks at them very proudly and then moves them around.
So does he just have one specific mug room?
Well, no, he's built some shelves in the kitchen. And he has this terrible tragedy a few years ago when this shelf came down and broke all the mugs.
Oh, which team did he lose?
He lost a lot of teams, and some of them are broken. Some of them are mere sham mugs now. It's just the front of them and the back's all cracked.
Like it was facade. My dad
referred to as the wall shelf crash, and he lost hundreds and hundreds of mugs. Well, not hundreds, but he lost quite a few.
I suppose at least it gives you a mission in life to go and get them back.
Exactly. I think he's got pretty much every English club except two or three now, and obviously he's got a whole load of Spanish and French and Italian stuff as well.
Oh, good to know. We should probably talk about the game. How was it for you?
It was quite interesting in a not particularly interesting sort of way, in that the first half was really poor. The first half reminded me of something that Juan Melillo said to me once. Now, Juan Melillo was the former coach of Almeria and was very, very close to Pep Guardiola, and is very self-consciously intellectual about his football and very self-consciously puritanical as well about the way you should play, moving the ball around. His argument was always, counter-attacking football doesn't exist. To which, of course, I said to him, you're talking about, of course it exists. He said, well, all right, it does exist, but what happens if you get two teams that want to counterattack? Basically, the ball stays in the middle of the pitch. The two teams stay at each end. They go, go on then. And they go, no, you go on then. No, you go on then. And a little bit, that was what was happening between Madrid and Leon in the first half. Both sides were playing it long, waiting for the chance for a loose ball to take advantage of. And Leon, I thought, were the better of the two sides. But Madrid probably deserved the win in the end. They didn't get it. They hit the post twice in a couple of minutes. And then, of course, Karim Benzema, of all people, got the goal. And I was really, really taken by the reaction of the Lyon fans to Benzema. They really genuinely love him.
Real should get through, though.
Genuinely love him is a bit strong, isn't it? You know, that sounds a bit freaky.
Right, now, in the Europa League, the once mighty Sevilla went out, despite a 1-0 win at Porto. What's happened to them?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing first, the 1-0 win at Porto is actually a very good result, as lots of people have been telling me since I pointed out how sad it was to see Sevilla's decline, that Porto are genuinely a good side, and winning 1-0 there is a really, really good performance, although the performance I didn't think was very good. And Sevilla have been desperately unlucky, I think, to lose the first leg. So maybe we shouldn't kind of go all out on them. But I think this is a bigger problem, and it's a bigger problem in the sense that there's just a kind of... I just feel a kind of sadness watching Sevilla now, because it's not just that they're not as good as they used to be, but they used to be so much fun to watch. They were so intense, they were so quick, they were so aggressive, and they're just not anymore. You know, they're just not the team they once were to watch, and it's a real pity, because they were the kind of team that you really felt you could kind of get behind. You could really feel like you wanted them to win the league, not least because it's great if anyone who's not Madrid or Barcelona wins the league. And they're just not what they were. Basically, I think there's a series of factors. The departure of players eventually caught up with them. They used to have fantastic success in selling on players and not feeling it. You know, they sold Julio Baptista, they sold Jose Antonio Reyes, they sold Sergio Ramos, and none of those caused them problems. But then they sold Dani Alves, who I've been on record before as saying is the second best player in the world. Now, I know that's a slight exaggeration, but his departure did them real damage. And also the genius of a sporting director who is buying all these great players very cheap, then started buying more expensive players, and they turned out to be rubbish.
A couple more things quickly. At the weekend, Barca take on Mallorca. Real head to Deportivo.
Yeah, Madrid head to Deportivo. In La Coruña, they hadn't won for 17 years until a Guti back heel finally ended that drought. I think they will go there and win again, even though Depor, of course, now have the world's greatest goal-scoring goalkeeper. And I think Barcelona may drop points in Mallorca. Mallorca aside, who've proven themselves to be very, very well organised this year. They've got some surprisingly good results. They drew 0-0 with Real Madrid, for example. They drew 1-1 with Barcelona in Barcelona. And Barcelona will be without Alves, Valdés, Puyol and Xavi. So depending on what the odds are like, Sean, I suspect they might be worth a 5 or 2 on that.
Also, Arsenal and Barca are at war again. That's what it says on this piece of paper, over a 16-year-old, Jean-Michel Torral.
Yeah, John Torral, who's got an English mother and wants to play in England, has gone to Arsenal. I must say, I find this whole sort of the kind of reaction to it a little tiresome. Football club gets upset because player goes to other football club, same football club that took player from other football club and is still trying to do so. And not just in the sense of Barcelona and Arsenal, but this happens all the time and get uppity about the clubs taking your players. You do it, they do it, everyone does it, get over yourselves. The reaction has been, I mean, in particular, one of the Catalan dailies, El Mundo Deportivo, which toes a very close party line, went for Wenger yesterday, described him as public enemy number one, and wasn't this a disgrace? And I was thinking to myself, what a disgrace, because a very, very young kid has gone for €600,000. And not only that, if you're going to ask about who do you blame in this, well, the agent that did it was Pep Guardiola's brother. So ultimately, if the kid doesn't want to stay at Barcelona, he doesn't want to stay at Barcelona. Of course, as you can imagine, this is all feeding into the battle that's already raging over Cesc Fabregas. Arsenal felt that Barcelona were out of order trying to sign Fabregas. They've now signed a Barcelona player, just as indeed they did with Fabregas in the first place. Barcelona, by the way, didn't sign Leo Messi off his front living room. They signed him off an Argentinian club who wouldn't pay for his growth treatment. So it just happens. And I find the kind of the over-the-top moral outpouring a bit bizarre, really.
Okay, right. Well, Sid, thanks very much for joining us. I've enjoyed talking to you these two times. You're doing DIY right now. What are you currently working on right now?
I'm doing DIY. I'm sitting here and supervising, trying to fix some doors on a cupboard.
Okay, that's good to know. Sid in Madrid, thank you very much. Let's touch on the Championship. Simon, you're here as a Football League expert. As a Cambridge fan, I dream of being back in the Football League. Let's talk about the Championship. QPR still setting the pace, but big battle for second place.
Real battle for second place. Quite an interesting set of games this midweek. Swansea won, Cardiff beat Sven Joran Eriksson's in-form Leicester. But below that, there are a couple of real humdingers, particularly Nottingham Forest, who've been in such great form of late, were held by Preston in quite a thrilling game. Forest went ahead, took a 2-1 lead in the 92nd minute, and Preston, who are bottom of the league and have been struggling to get a point off anyone, somehow conjured an equaliser in the 96th minute, leading to an in-your-face celebration. The Preston bench ran en masse to celebrate in front of the Forest bench, and it was all.
Was there a fight?
There was not a fight, and both managers were at pains afterwards to say that it was all kind of fair and.
But
fine.
No one squared up to anyone in that kind of.
Not really. There was just a bit of fist shaking in the general direction of, because Forrest had obviously celebrated their 92nd minute, what they thought was a winner, pretty
in front of the other bench.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah, it was a hell of a thing. also, while I'm at it, towards the bottom of the league, Sheffield United had a really, really dismal game.
They were two up in really early on.
Yeah, they were two up in 7 minutes. Against another struggling side and managed to lose. And although they're still, and Preston are a long way adrift, but Sheffield United aren't that far away from safety. But it was one of those games that you think might be really meaningful, and Sheffield United can't win for toffee at present.
Is it worth flagging up Hull, who haven't lost in the league for a long, long time and are slowly inching towards the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, Hull...
that was more a no, wasn't it?
Well, Hull beat Derby, another hopelessly out-of-form side. There's a few teams in the division that are really struggling for any kind of form. Sheffield United are 12 games without a win now. Derby are 8. Watford, who...
This is your team.
Watford, who are my team, won 7 on the spin, and then since the end of that run have now failed to win 7 on the spin. It's been a kind of odd division this year, with teams going on runs and then on good runs and bad runs. And there are
so we think QPR will win it?
Well, I mean, it's looking that way, isn't it?
So who's going to come second?
You can't really say anything other than that it's a three-way fight. Currently, the two Welsh sides and Nottingham Forest. And Forest form is really excellent. Cardiff have been very up and down this season, and though they had a good win this midweek, I mean, you've got to say it's probably one of those three.
Barry, you're studying a league table. Is it the Championship you're studying?
Well, I'm just looking at it. I printed off the Championship table, from 18th down got cut off, so it's kind of useless. But Mickey Adams got parachuted in to save Sheffield United. I think they haven't won any of the 11 games he's presided for. So I would imagine he's probably not. He'll be back to the managerial merry-go-round before too long. His seat will be still warm.
I mean, possibly. I don't know whether they will cut him adrift so soon.
He's at fourth.
He was asked, after they lost to Scunthorpe on Tuesday, he was asked if he could see a way out of it for Sheffield United. He said no.
That's what you need, isn't it?
Which isn't particularly encouraging. Whereas Phil Brown, when he's asked about Preston's immediate future. He talks about the way that they will, and that there's no conditional about their avoiding relegation. The way when we do avoid relegation, it will be great. Which, I mean, frankly, makes him seem a little delusional. But
so it's will the power of positive thought help them through?
Well, they are 10 points from safety at the moment, which is a lot of points for a team that can't win.
But you've got a league table that shows you the bottom of the table, which is better research than Barry did. But, you know, good try. You know, at least I didn't print out any of the tables. Sean, did you?
No.
No, OK, so you're above us. That's good. Right, that's the end of part two. In part three...
If I was printing a league table of people who printed league tables, I would be... second in it out of the four of us.
It's a Champions League spot.
Even though mine was had many shortcomings.
You're right. So congratulations.
And the bottom of the one I print would probably be missing.
Right. That was part two in part three. Cup final weekend, tweets and things. And I unveil, you'll love this, Barry, which two minor celebrities crossed my path this week. Welcome to part three of Football Weekly Extra. There are two burning issues, all right, fellas, from Monday's pod. Firstly, Jonathan Wilson was furious, I think it's the only way we can say it, with the fact that, Barry, you and other Irish people can vote in our elections.
Yes.
Were you upset with how angry he was?
I was slightly surprised, but no, I certainly wasn't upset. The funny thing is, I'm not actually allowed to vote in the Irish elections because I'm not on the electoral roll.
Which is tomorrow,
anymore.
Isn't it?
It's tomorrow. Well, tomorrow being Friday, yes.
Why can't you do that? Why can't you vote in that?
Because I've been away for so long that my name's been taken off the electoral roll.
It's down in my ear that you're on the wrong register. But
yeah, if you're on one register, you're not allowed to be on the other.
Anyway, look,
I am on a list.
It's always good to be on a list somewhere. But I just thought I'd get the facts for us, although I did print them from Wikipedia, which once said I was a member of the BNP and going out with Louis Walsh. So, you know, we can't trust everything we read on Wikipedia. Anyone who will be aged 18 or over on polling day and who is a national of the United Kingdom, all forms of British nationality, excluding British protected persons, I don't know what they are, the Republic of Ireland, a Commonwealth country, including Fiji, Zimbabwe and the whole of Cyprus, or a EU member state, can apply to the electoral registration officer in the district in the UK where they reside with a considerable degree of permanence to be listed in that area's electoral register. So lots of people can vote. You don't have to react to that. It was just to get the facts out there after Monday. Thanks for not reacting.
You get voting tourists, right? Presumably, it's a reciprocal arrangement. We can vote anywhere in Europe. I mean, people could go on a gap year to just vote, right?
That's a big holiday, though, as a tourist, isn't it? It depends, the quote, considerable degree of permanence.
Yeah, if that's more than a weekend in East Hostel.
Yeah, I was told that there are other parts of the Guardian website where this may be better explained.
I would imagine there are almost certainly are.
I can't imagine where.
No. And also, after Monday, we touched on the blog. Producer Ben told me no account to read it because of the hideous reaction that there would be. Clearly the first thing I did was read it. And there was faint praise, voodoo to you two, who said, I don't know who Max Rushton is, but he should stick to TV. You need to have the ability to listen to work on the radio or on a pod like this. We don't care he bought an apartment. We don't care what kind of horn he blows in his spare time. We don't care what celebrities tweet him.
Louis Walsh, apparently.
say again?
Louis Walsh.
Come back, Jimbo, and save us from the endless inanities of the terminally egocentric. Barry, for God's sake, call this man a taxi and see him safely off the premises. I don't believe I get a taxi at the end. But for voodoo to you too, I would just say, yesterday I spent all the morning agonising over what tap to get with my bathroom sink. I don't know, it's very new for me, all of this. I'd have thought if you bought a sink, you'd get a tap with it.
No. No, and taps are often more expensive than the sink.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? But like, who buys a sink and says, I won't have a tap, I'll just have a sink without a tap?
Is there not a sink there already?
I chucked it out.
Ooh.
Well, no, I mean, you wouldn't have gone ooh if you saw the sink that was there. It was a bit grubby. It was falling apart. The whole place, it was sort of damp and messy. And in minor celebrity news, you'll enjoy this, Barry. Yesterday, I played urban golf with Trevor Nelson.
Oh, my God.
He beat me. in both games. More exciting than that, on Sunday, I have a charity cricket match against Chris Tarrant. Yeah, that was no reaction. I was expecting more.
I'm not so excited
about Chris Tarrant. February.
Yeah, so it's called February Fools.
Just you against Chris Tarrant.
I hope there are other people. But they asked me to bring some wicket-keeping kit, and I don't have any. Right, other midweek action. Start on Monday. It seemed ages ago, but West Ham beat Burnley 5-1 in the FA Cup. Thomas Hitzlsperger's back. It's better for West Ham. They've got a chance, haven't they?
Well, I saw that game, and Hitzlsperger was fantastic. Carlton Cole scored one very fluky goal and one well-taken goal. I would have put my life on him ballooning it over the bar, and he didn't. He finished well. It's a good result for them. Obviously, it's the Cup, so it's not worth a hill of beans, their league problems. But the fact that Hitzlsperger was so impressive is good.
In the Premier League, great week for Arsenal, terrible week for Spurs, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal played well enough. They're only 1 point now behind Manchester United. Spurs went away at Blackpool, lost 3-1. And Blackpool have inched their way up now. They're level with Blackburn, and they're only, I think, a point behind Stoke. And, you know, you think Blackburn and Stoke are very, you know, two well-established mid-table teams, and Blackpool have, you know, pushed their way up there.
Harry was furious with his strikers. I can't understand why Jermaine Defoe can't score. I always look at him and think, he looks like a really brilliant footballer, and has he not scored a league goal this season? Something like that.
I think I heard someone saying that, all right. I don't
Since
have
April.
His stats to hand.
So that would be this season.
He seemed to have, on Tuesday, he seemed to have an unerring eye for that bloke on the line, who he hit on numerous occasions. But on chances created, Spurs would have won 10-3. But 'twas not to be.
Arsenal's victory against Stoke, it's a great win, and you almost forget about those Premier League games when no one else is playing in the Premier League. But Walcott definitely out of the Carling Cup final. Fabregas potentially out of the Carling Cup final. They're two big losses.
They are two big losses, and obviously having not, they're desperate to end their 5-year trophy drought.
6 years.
6-year trophy drought.
Say that again, sorry.
Well, I think, yeah. They're desperate to put an end to that run of misery. And Walcott has been in really good form the last few weeks, and indeed for much of the season. But they would still expect to beat Birmingham, I would have thought.
Do we give Birmingham any chance?
Give them a chance, and not a very big chance. I mean, the recent winners of the Carling Cup are Man United, Spurs, Chelsea, Man United, Chelsea. The last surprise winners, say, would be Borough 2004, Blackburn 2002, and Leicester in 2000. And I'll give any man in this room a shiny pound if they can tell me who was the last Birmingham player to score in the Carling Cup final.
Against Liverpool, wasn't it?
Yeah. Andy Johnson.
2001, nope. He missed a penalty.
Though. He did miss a penalty.
In the shootout.
Was Ricky Otto playing then?
No. Darren Purse.
Darren Purse.
Oh, yes.
Was that a penno as well in normal time?
In extra time. Or, sorry, injury time.
In injury
and
time.
And Birmingham should have had another penalty, which would have won them the game, but David Ellery turned them down.
All right. Good stats.
And Birmingham also without David Bentley, who's come in on loan from Tottenham and has started every game since the last seven games. So for all that, Arsenal will be missing at least one of their important players. But Bentley's absence will be felt by Birmingham, I'd have thought.
One thing I think is quite interesting is just how long this Arsenal team has taken to get to this stage. And Wenger every year has talked about blooding his young players in the Carling Cup, but he's actually, you know, it's almost been a different team every season. I mean, Sebastian Larsson, who's going to be playing for Birmingham on mm-hmm. Sunday, he was one of these players that was blooded in the Carling Cup and wasn't considered good enough by Wenger. But this season, finally, he's put together close to his first team, and he could be rewarded with one trophy. And then you wonder whether this will, you know, will just be the start of more.
Yeah, can they win the quadruple? How many do you give them out of the four? I mean, I still, most people think they're probably not going to get past Barcelona, don't they?
Personally, I don't. I'd say they'll probably win the Carling Cup. I don't think they'll win the league. And
they got Man U if they beat Orient in the FA Cup as well.
I mean, I think they have a chance in the league just because they have an easier run-in. I mean, the next few games, they've got Sunderland at home, West Brom away, Blackburn at home, Blackpool away. So they've got a real chance to build momentum, while United are playing Wigan on Saturday, but then Chelsea away and Liverpool away. So, yeah, they're only 1 point behind. There could be a switch there.
And if Arsenal just win the Carling Cup, is that a successful season?
No.
Not really. It's just a bit of a monkey off their backs. I noticed on their Arsenal website this morning, they've got a story saying that the team that wins the Carling Cup tends over the last 10 years to have a 10% performance improvement after the Carling Cup final. They get more points per game than the season up to that point.
Who studied and found that out?
Some statistical buffing.
A lot of time on there.
So maybe they'll win on Sunday, and from then on it'll be onwards and upwards.
I have a vague recollection of when Spurs won it, did they not go on the piss then for the next 3 months and not win a game at all? Or am I completely...
I can't remember winning Spurs last winning.
I have a vague recollection.
Was it Adam Nielsen, or was there another one since then?
The year before last, they beat
Manchester United in the final.
On penalties. And then there was pictures.
I was playing in the celebrity cricket match that day.
Oh, God.
But no one had heard of me then, so anyone can turn up, really.
Yeah. I'd say you're not exactly getting mobbed in the street now either.
You can tell. There are not people banging at the glass. Right now, right, Premier League fixtures. It's not a gripping fixture list. If you'd pipe up, if you've got anything interesting to say about the fixtures, I'd like that. Villa Blackburn. Everton Sunderland.
It's not that interesting, but Jack Rodwell is going to make a miracle return on Saturday against Sunderland. He did his groin while playing for England on 21s a couple of weeks ago. He was supposed to be out till April, and here he is back in the first team squad, and it's still February. And isn't that great for Everton in their battle to avoid the drop?
And is that because somebody didn't tell the truth, or because he just has a miraculous groin?
I think he must have a miraculous groin, although the last time he sustained a long-term injury, he was back much quicker than anticipated. I think he might just be a miraculous healing man, and after he retires from football, he can travel from hospital to hospital laying his
touching
hands
people.
on
touching the, people with his miraculous groin.
He's a footballer, he'll probably do that anyway.
Newcastle Bolton.
Well, it was 5-1 the first game between them this season. Kevin Nolan returned to Bolton for the first time since the move to Newcastle and gave away a penalty and had a bit of a dismal day. So they'll be looking for, and he'll be looking for some kind of revenge for that.
Wigan Man United.
Wigan have never taken a point off Man United since they've returned to the Premier League.
Oh, that's very good.
So, plus, they've met once in the Cup in that time. There's 11 league matches, plus once in the Cup, and that's 12 defeats.
Your notes are coming to the fore in this section.
That's just off the top of my head.
Okay.
And over those 12 games, they've won, on aggregate, 39-4.
I love that when they put those stats together. It's very important that we knew that. Barry, you've yet to help us with our Premier League.
Yeah, and I see the next one up is Wolves Blackpool, and obviously I can't tell where Wolves are because the bottom of my table is missing. But I would very much like Wolves to win that game, personally. I'm a big fan of Blackpool and what they've brought to the party this season, but I'm also a big fan of Mick McCarthy. I think he's a very nice, decent guy, and... I don't think Wolves should be bottom of the table because some of the performances they've put in this season, both in victory and defeat, have been marvellous.
So who should be then?
Pardon?
Who should be?
Good question.
Who should be? I think Wigan. Wigan aren't they? Yeah. At the moment we have four teams beginning with W at the bottom of the table, so possibly a good way of avoiding the drop is for one of those clubs to change their name by deed poll to something other than, you know, Dulverhampton Wanderers, and that might help them escape the drop, but
probably won't help them, will it?
Probably not. No, probably wouldn't.
Introduce some controversy as well. What about West Ham Liverpool? Could be the debut for Andy Carroll.
Unlikely. I mean, Dalglish was talking yesterday and said he's probably at least a week away. You know, I've criticised West Ham a lot, and they were very good on Monday, or certainly the second half. But the fact remains, in the league, they've won 5 times out of 27 matches. They've got a very difficult run in. They play a lot of the sides on top half of the table, and they really do need to start winning, particularly at home.
And Man City, Fulham.
Sorry, just the two things I wanted to mention. Just about, you mentioned Andy Carroll, and I saw an interview with Dalglish yesterday in which we said Kenny Dalglish and Andy Carroll went to a Boyzone concert together.
Mm. What?
Yeah.
When was this?
There was a Twitter storm midweek when it was revealed mid-concert on Twitter. It suddenly started doing the rounds that Andy Carroll was there.
Were they right at the front? Can you crowd surf at a Boyzone gig?
Don't know.
I don't know. They were probably in the roped off VIP section with a few wives and girlfriends of players, I imagine.
See, boys don't have the sort of comeback cool of
do they? I think it was greeted with horror in his native northeast that a Geordie boy would be seen in at a boys' own concert.
Changed man.
That's right. He's only just moved.
Look, each their own. You can. I think you should be able to. Well,
Who's the England front row forward in rugby? Is it Vickery? Yeah. Who makes absolutely perhaps. No apology. I love Boyzone and I don't care who knows it.
And you wouldn't argue with him?
No, you wouldn't.
Okay. Well, look, good luck to Phil, Kenny and Andy in loving Boyzone. I can't think of any of their songs right now.
But they're all the
love
same.
Love me for a reason, gloopy I believe. Old is that not one?
Crud, sit on a stool, stand up, turn around, sit down.
They speak highly of you, Barry. Yeah. Right, let's finish with some... Oh, we can... Man City,
you know,
we Fulham.
Tried to get Ronan Keating in instead of you.
Is that right? Ronan wouldn't do it.
No.
Yeah, I played football with him once. Anyway. I'll tell you what's good. If you stand near him and Ollie Murs after the game, you think all these women are screaming at you. It makes you feel really good about yourself. But then they couldn't give two hoots who you are when you walk off and they scream at them still. There you are. It's just for future reference, Barry. Yeah. If you ever on the pitch with them. Man City, Fulham.
Well, obviously, it's Marquise is returning to Manchester City, I think, for the first time since he was given the boot.
And we all agree he was unfairly sacked.
I don't know. They were fifth or sixth when he was gone. I think him and Mancini have done roughly the same. I think he did great at City. He was very polite and he didn't really put the boot in when the two sides met. At Craven Cottage earlier this season. It'd be interesting, you know, I'm sure he'll be prodded by the journalists tomorrow to try and get, say, something narky about City.
We have some tweets to finish with. Barry, this is for you. Michael McCarthy asks, I've always wanted to know why you support Sunderland. Don't most Irish people tend to support Man United or Liverpool?
The reason I support Sunderland is, and I don't support them very enthusiastically, you know, I rarely go to games and rarely support them from beyond the comfort of my own armchair, but a lot of people think it's because of the Roy Keane, Niall Quinn thing, and it isn't. It's because my dad supported them when he was a kid, because Charlie Hurley, a famous Irish player, used to play for them, and or maybe not when he was a kid, but when he was a young man, and it's true that most Irish people support Liverpool or Manchester United, or certainly, you know, if you go to the pub in Ireland on a Sunday afternoon or whatever, lots of guys in Man U Liverpool replica shirts. But I remember coming over with some friends to go to a Merseyside derby once. They were all Everton fans and they had spare tickets, so I went along and we were on the ferry and there was an astonishing number of Irish Leicester City fans on the boat, which, yeah, they were coming over for a Carling Cup final replay, I think. And I was very surprised by that. And also, when I worked for Hot Press magazine in Dublin, our local used to be a bar, the International Bar, and the Dublin branch of the West Ham, Irish West Ham Supporters Club used to have their monthly meeting in there. I think it was the first Monday of every month, and there was an awful lot of them as well. So you will find supporters of the strangest English clubs in Ireland. And yeah, it is kind of like, bloody hell, how did you end up supporting that team?
Another question for you. All Tuesday's Champions League goals were from Frenchmen. Barry, have you revised your opinion of Gaelic football?
No.
Brilliant. Right. Well, that's it. Done. Anyone doing anything interesting today? Barry?
No.
Sean?
I'm continuing to work on the Guardian's award-winning Formula One guide, which will be out in a few weeks' time, the Monday before the start of the Formula One season. It's going to be extremely exciting.
Have you had to shift pages around and stuff because of the Bahrain Grand Prix being cancelled?
We had a guide. We've got a page on it every Grand Prix, and we've had to dump that one and replace it with a nice big picture.
Are the Libyan, Tunisian and Egyptian Grand Prix going ahead?
Yeah, I think that the lack of a Libyan Grand Prix is something everyone is grateful.
It's a shame. Speaking of Libya, we didn't ask Ass after Benzema scored. They equated the picture of Florentino Perez celebrating. They said that the image will go around the world alongside that of Gaddafi.
Mm. And they're the two that are really on the front of... They're the two trending topics on Twitter.
Apparently, he was celebrating that. You could see his armpits and his everything. But it's his nostrils and his all sorts.
His all sorts is still not quite. All right, well that's it. Thanks very much. Thanks for having me, fellas. I enjoyed it this week. And my aim was to make sure that Jimbo still has some listeners on Monday afternoon. Hopefully that's happened.
There'll probably be a few.
You never know.
My mum will listen whatever happens.
Good. Is that right? Because my dad still watches soccer and my mum watches for 2 minutes to check I'm alive and then goes and does the garden.
Yeah.
And, well, look, thanks to James as well.
Is your dad proud of the product you peddle?
Yeah, I think he is. I think it might surprise you if you watched it.
Yeah, well.
Give it a try.
I'm sure it's very good, but I'm not.
You might have a Jay Demerit anecdote.
I'm actually... Like, I don't hang around with celebrities ever. So the fact, I mean, Jay Demerit, I don't know, it's actually really
you've
name nice
dropped
guy.
About 15 well, only, but since sort of in like a
sort of ironic, in a sort of ironic way, because I don't. I hang around with my schoolmates, and I just don't think I'm coming out, you know, so I'm nervous about doing another one. But it's only Jay Demerit. He's a really nice guy, Jay, bright. But I just went to a barbecue at his house once. It wasn't an anecdote.
It's not the greatest anecdote.
No, we watched the Super Bowl together as well.
Actually, one thing I wanted to... regard to Andy Carroll and Doug Leash going to Boyzone. One other thing I read today in the Louise Taylor's column on the back of the sports section is Shola Amiobi is a big reader and is currently grappling with Ulysses, which I have to say came as a huge, huge surprise.
She also says he's really... I mean, I've never really watched him enough to know how good he is, but she seems to put him on a pedestal as a truly great footballer.
What was it? Apparently Howard Wilkinson said about him, you know, I don't know, Shola's got something, I just don't know what it is.
Yeah, that's a great line, isn't it? Just to drop another footballer in, I bumped into Damien Duff as I was walking out of the wildlife photography exhibition at the Natural History Museum, and he was walking in, and he said, oh, I've got a ticket for the wildlife photography exhibition, which is the best exhibition in London each year, I think.
Yeah, I might go and see it.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, I have a lovely day out every year in Kensington.
I'll tell you something about Damien Duff. He loves musicals.
Does he?
West End musicals.
So does Robbie Fowler. Yeah. They could go together and then sit down with Kenny Dalglish.
Then people might talk.
Sit down with Andy Carroll and Kenny Dalglish and just discuss the merits of that kind of chirpy music. Okay, good. Well, look, thanks for listening to this. If you have a telly, I'll see you on Saturday. If you haven't got a telly, get one, because they're really good. It's loads of channels, everything. Watch whatever you like. Cooking if you want. Like the omelette bit. That's good. Done.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.